is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today's show deals with, again, the great subjects of metaphysics and spirituality, which is what the show is, in, I'd say, general about. Besides which, today's show specifically is the metaphysical implications of entanglement. Ooh, what is that? Well, I'm going to explain it. And, of course, it deals with not only metaphysics, but particularly in today's show, some elements of physics. But it also explains how and why there is a thing that I call God. And so if you're interested in that, you certainly should stay tuned in, because this is really the foundation, I think, of many parts of metaphysics over physics itself, as well as, in this particular case, something that physics is grappling with, although oddly, this subject has honestly been around for about 80 years. For 80 years, physics in general has been aware of what we're going to be talking about tonight, and it has been generally ignored. I'm not kidding you. It was ignored because the subject itself, which has to do with entanglement, was created in a theory by a fellow named Schrodinger, I'll try to get that out correctly, Schrodinger, who wrote a number of papers and came up with a theory that suggested that there was something called non-local interaction. And you might say, well, what the heck is that? Non-local? Who? Well, you see, Albert Einstein had written a number of articles and papers, as well as special relativity and general relativity, before Schrodinger had written anything. And what Einstein had said is everything is connected in some way, and it's all part and parcel of a fabric of time and space. And so consequently, you can't have something happening on one side of the universe affecting the other side of the universe without there being some kind of connective factors, usually involving different forms of energy and moving within time and space, and not ever exceeding the speed of light. This was the basic model. Some people call it the standardized or standard model that Albert Einstein had come up with, and it seemed to make sense because all of his formulas produced the same kind of, we'll say, conclusions. And eventually, when tests were made, the tests proved pretty much, and maybe even more than that, that Einstein was right. So it seemed like, why rock the boat? Hey, this guy Albert Einstein said that this is the way it is. And furthermore, if it isn't that way, if something could go faster than the speed of light, and maybe even infinitely fast, taking no time at all to cross our entire known universe, and have an effect on something else without using any kind of energy or something like that, that would just turn everything upside down. And this Schrodinger stuff didn't seem to really bring anybody to a happy ending, so they kind of ignored it. And for a long time, unfortunately, this guy's theories were ignored. I mean, just literally. Now, you might say, well, so what changed? Well, since about the 1970s, there has been a concern that certain effects on a large scale, big effects, could not be explained. I'll give you an example of one of them, and that is called rogue waves. Now, these aren't waves like microwaves in your oven. These are like waves in the ocean. Big, huge, big, giant waves that were suddenly forming within a few seconds with amounts of energy that was almost inconceivable. They could be hundreds of miles long, but only maybe a few hundred yards or meters wide, and they could come crashing down from 100, 120 feet tall, and do tremendously destructive things if something was in the way, like a very large ship. And the problem with this is that you could describe these waves as coming about randomly. All right, randomly? Okay. about once every 10,000 or so years, based upon the number of waves per square mile of ocean, averaging all the ocean square miles together, that's about how often you would expect to find these things. Well, in the 1970s, there were reports of these things happening like every day. Well, that doesn't equal once every 10,000 years. I mean, there's a factor of like a million or something difference there. And first they were ignored. Everybody said, oh, it's the seafarers, you know, those guys that always see sea monsters. Now they're seeing waves at 120 feet tall that come smash their boats up. But the problem was they started seeing artifacts of boats. Sometimes they would even get a hole or part of a boat, and the boat itself, the ship, which was huge, you know, like 50,000 tons or whatever, were completely destroyed. And it all happened, they know, in a very short period of time, because the clocks would stop and everything would break in the ship. And they know that it all took place in a few seconds. And so this started to confound people who were more in the engineering field of how do you build boats, how do you make ships that are going to last in these kind of unusual circumstances. But then somebody said, well, why aren't we asking the real question here? How do you have a wave that's supposed to happen once every 10,000 years, and we know statistically that's a fact, that's going on every day, maybe more than once a day? Because, I mean, the facts are now we know that about one ship out of so many, it actually equals about one on an average per week for the whole world, is hit by one of these things. That's a huge number. It's like 50 ships a year, right? 52 a year. And that's just incredible because these things must be going on all over the place, like popcorn or something. And it means that there has to be something else in physics that would explain it. Well, a few of the more open-minded scientists who are quantum physicists said, you know, there was this guy Schrodinger, and he wrote this theory called entanglement that had to do with non-locality, where energy could just suddenly build up and then suddenly diminish itself, and it could happen without anything apparently in the vicinity causing it to happen. And this caused an uproar because at first they were condemned as being quacks and, you know, people who going back to the 1920s looking for a stupid answer to something that's happening in the physical world. But eventually, it turned out to be something other than that. And I got so excited about the subject, I forgot to mention, if you would like to call in, make a statement, maybe you're a physicist and don't agree with me, that's okay. I would love to hear from you. You can call in at 877-876-5227. If you're in, that's in the U.S. If you're in Canada, try us at 888-815-9756. Okay, let me continue on because this is an exciting subject to me. The exciting part, I realize, doesn't seem to be what I'm talking about, but it will become really exciting when you understand the implications and I bring out the whole thing. So just give me a little chance here, okay? All right, so these poor guys that were, and women, that were coming up with these theories that it was something dealing with Schrodinger waves and entanglement and weird stuff, they were all just completely pushed to the side back in the 70s and the 80s. But, you know, the weird thing is that some of these scientists, these physicists, decided that they would actually run model experiments to see if the formulas of Schrodinger were going to be if put into the model of the oceans of our planet, we're going to actually explain the results. In other words, that you would have this percentage of wave activity that would produce the kind of terrible results that were happening to so many ships. And it turned out that it came out exactly correct. I mean, they could predict pretty very closely what was going to happen, and that's what was happening. And so this scared everybody. I mean, this really shook a number of people because, in science, one of the things that's a determiner of truth is can you predict what's going to happen? Because if you can predict what's going to happen and you're using a theory then the theory is known to be having validity because it is a predictor of results. It doesn't mean that there's always, that always is the truth, but it gets closer, a lot closer than not being able to predict what's going to happen. So that kind of left everybody, like, shocked. And then in the 1980s, late 80s and 90s, there were experiments done with particle physics, with accelerators. Some of the string theorists started talking about the possibility that maybe non-locality, it's called, is caused by the ability for things to act or come from outside of the dimension of time and space that we exist in. In other words, they started talking about multidimensional issues, and that they started plugging in again Schrodinger formulas dealing with certain effects that were found in particle physics accelerators and other things, and suddenly it all started to come together. What was that? What came together was that entanglement is reality, and the idea that entanglement doesn't exist can't be true. In other words, they had enough proof that entanglement is a valid effect. It's not just a theory anymore. What is entanglement specifically? Entanglement is if you're a part of an atom and you're on the other side of our known universe and you decide to wiggle your particle all around a little bit, you could have an effect on another particle of an atom that's 14 billion light years away, and the two of you can get together and wiggle together. And it can be done in no time at all. No time by our definition of time takes place, and the two can get together and say, whoa, let's do it. And if you have a zillion particles of atoms and a zillion atoms and a zillion maybe molecules, they could do the same thing, again, in no time at all. And what they found is that it wasn't just based upon a single particle, but actually it's catchy, based upon what was determined in particle physics. It was actually kind of a thing where you get a few of these things going, and before long, you get a lot of stuff happening where it's sort of like everybody wants to dance to the same tune, but the tune is being created by them all together. And that's called entanglement. And there is very concrete evidence that this actually is taking place. Now you might say, oh, well, okay. So I guess we don't have just locality, we have non-locality. These things don't have to all be touching each other to eventually have an effect on each other. They can be very far apart, so far apart, as far as great as our entire universe, and still have an effect on each other. But that begs another question, a few at least. And that is, how is that done? I mean, how are these things doing? How do more numbers than you can, zeros than you can imagine, of atoms in the ocean water all get together, take all the energy from the surrounding field that they exist in, add all that energy together, and create a wave that has more energy in it than some hurricanes. And they can deliver that energy in a second. How is it they can do that? I mean, if we were trying to communicate among ourselves, and we're conscious beings, right, we couldn't do that. But somehow the atoms can do it. How do they do it? Well, I'm going to answer that question, of course, but I like playing with you guys and let you think more about it and give you some more information. All right, so this is, and what I'm telling you is the last few years. We're not talking about, like, if you go back to a physics book from 1990, good luck. You're not going to find much about this. They may talk a little bit about entanglement, but as more of a fantasy theory that probably doesn't really, they just can't figure out what it really is, and so they put in, it's like a placeholder kind of thing. Today, it's not like that at all. As a matter of fact, let me tell you something else that's going on. They're building things called quantum computers. They being physicists and computer scientists and people who want to make computers go faster and be able to process more information in a lot less time and more accurately in some cases. Accuracy is a kind of weird thing when it comes to computers. You might say, well, I thought a computer was either on or off. How could it be inaccurate? Well, these computers actually have some kind of thought thing going on, and so they actually have a level of accuracy. But that's another story. Let's get back to this issue. Okay, they're building computers that they want to go faster, and they're finding that the fastest way for a computer to go faster is to use quantum mechanics. Now, what is quantum mechanics? It's weird. You get into the weird thing about how the subatomic particles move around and within an atom and how they can be at various levels of existence. And one of these levels of existence now is the relative level of entanglement. Yeah, I'm not kidding you. They actually now want to use entanglement to be able to make computers much faster. Because now you can have a computer that works not only in a linear fashion, but works in a way that gets all the other, we'll call it particles that make up the computer, working together and creating a synergistic effect to the computing power. Yeah. And it does it automatically and on its own. So we can't really tell it to do it. We just kind of have to sit back and let it do it. But here's the little thing that I think this is the part I love. This is the part of physics that is right on the edge. It's so far on the edge, it's probably still considered metaphysics, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway, because this is where we're moving into the metaphysical realm. One of the things they're finding is that since they're trying to get computers to work faster through a thing called entanglement, where there's a commonality of spins, etc., that is developed by the computer itself, and we can't make it happen, but it happens, they discovered that the computers and entanglement and even rogue waves are not random. In other words, the effects of entanglement, which up until this year were considered to be a random thing that just sort of happened on its own and went away and went, that sort of stuff, is not a random occurrence. Now, that's huge. Because if something isn't randomly occurring that is already outside of the realm of known physics, what does that mean? Because something that isn't random is created. And what is creating it? And there's only one answer, and the answer was actually found by another physicist in the 1920s, Heisenberg. Heisenberg found that the randomness of quantum physics is controlled by something so simple, but so frightening to most physicists, called thought. It appears, based upon the guys that are presently trying to make computers go faster, and are using this entanglement model and all this other stuff that is non-local and is able to make computers go a lot faster, is happening in a non-random fashion. How do they know that? Well, if it's random, the more you get of the entanglement, the faster the computer should go. That's just logic. Because if entanglement causes it to go faster, why not just jump up the entanglement? And they can actually produce more entanglement. There's certain tricks they can play on the subatomic particles involved in these computers to make them actually become more entangled. There are certain things they can do. But they're not in control, really. I don't want you to think that I'm contradicting what I said earlier. They aren't actually in control, but they can do certain things that leads them to eventually become more and more entangled. That is possible. But the interesting thing is that increases in entanglement beyond a certain defined point does not lead to a faster computer. It slows it down. I'm not kidding you. It slows it down. What does that mean? Well, it means that there's no randomness to what the particles are doing. They know what they're doing. And if you try to push them to go beyond a certain point, they stop acting in ways that are constructive, and they don't any longer function in ways that are consistent with one particle affecting another particle in a way that is consistently together with each other and all other particles. And that means that the breakdown in entanglement is what takes place rather than an increase in the speed of the computer. It also means that the only thing that could explain this entire effect is that there is something or some things that are thinking on a level that is beyond the level of our entire known universe, meaning extra-dimensionally, and that thought is affecting everything within our universe to respond in certain prescribed ways. And the more those things in our universe are attempting to work together, where there's a concise and accurate way, so they're trying to produce something that we would call good for themselves and for maybe us, the more they cannot deviate from this prescribed thought, which is the controlling factor behind them. Now we're talking about metaphysics. And we're talking about a creator. We're talking about, ultimately, there might be a lot of different levels of creation, but ultimately, there's a single level, the highest level of creation, that is involved in the entire process. Otherwise, you can't logically deduce everything I explained so far. And so there's only one answer is what I'm trying to explain. The answer is that there needs to be thought, and the thought has to be a certain kind of thought. It's not just any old thought. It's a quality to the thought that produces the best and highest results. Results being that the entanglement is producing the most efficient, the least destructive, the most beneficial outcomes. And this is what most people call religion or spiritual or God, because that is a very good definition for it, isn't it? And it's my definition. I've used it many, many times in things that I've written or talked about. And so, basically, we're getting... This is the strangest thing. It's like going through the back door of physics, and we're coming through that door, and now, all of a sudden, we're face-to-face with God. That's what I'm saying is happening. Now, I'm not saying that most physicists are where I am in explaining this to you. They might be in the next few years, though. I'm telling you that, because that's where we're heading. There is a confluence of so many factors. I just brought up this one example in computer science, but there are many other parts of physics that are drawing similar conclusions based upon completely different kinds of experiments, and they're all leading to the same outcome. They aren't contradicting each other. They are producing very similar results. And it is a strong indication there is a spiritual existence. There is a creative thought force, we'll call it, thought wave, that goes through the universe and is affecting everything down to the subatomic and right up to and beyond the entire universe we think we live in, although it's only one dimension of a multiverse, a multidimensional universe, much greater than the dimension that we exist in. We're in the basement, I call it that. Some people think we have three dimensions or four, but we actually only live in one. And each dimension beyond this one is even more complicated and has great effects overall on the universe we exist in, partly through entanglement. God's thought creates the effects of entanglement. God's thought creates effects beyond entanglement into every realm of every interaction of anything to anything else. The design is there, but it doesn't control the outcome. Just as we cannot control the outcome of even a simple quantum computer. We can't really control the outcome. We can kind of work with it. It's the same principle. We can co-create with God, and God can help that us by helping that life will grow and prosper to some extent. But God cannot think for us, because if God thinks for us, then God itself can never grow from the process. And I'm going to tell you that one of the major reasons this whole thing exists is so that its creator, God, can grow. Because otherwise there would be no possibility for God to grow without giving freedom to everything that it creates for it to think on its own at some level of ability to think. So this is what is coming out of these experiments that are so diverse, that, and it's all based upon this guy Schrodinger, who wrote these papers, and he came up with this model and was ignored. But you know, you can ignore the truth for a while, but you can't ignore it forever, because ultimately everything else that isn't truth will fall apart, and that's what's happened in physics. Physics has come apart, but metaphysics is prospering, because all the things that have been written in metaphysics are starting, or most of them, are coming together as a very coherent model. I'm telling you, it's just amazing watching this take place. And who knows, maybe in 10 years all the physics departments will change into metaphysics departments. It just means the physics beyond, the physics greater than the existing physics. And maybe that's what they're really going to start calling themselves, or something like that. Because there is no way to use physics, which has to do with the physical universe, as an explanation of the things that are going on around us, because everything is metaphysics, or outside of, or connected to something outside of the physical universe. That's why physics doesn't explain very much. It works good if you want to try to calculate maybe small things in our immediate world, you know, not going too far out into the universe, and if you're not going too very small in terms of, you know, like way below microscopic sizes, into the subatomic, that range, the physics we use doesn't work in either. But it works okay for our daily lives. So that's where it becomes practical physics and engineering. Under that basis, it actually has considerable use. But it doesn't explain why we're here. It doesn't explain where we're really going. And it doesn't explain God. Whereas metaphysics does, and now the two are really coming together as one. Okay, when we come back from break, I'm going to tell you what more this means, particularly the question of randomness versus non-randomness. For those of you who have been listening to me on the radio for, 5 or 6 years, you know I've been constantly saying that we don't live in a random universe. But you're going to see how important it is that that concept become really, we'll say, better understood. So when we come back, we'll work on that, and I'll explain more about how it can be better understood. And again, we've got an extra commercial put in with our commercials. Please listen to that. And we should be back in about 3.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Imagine. imagine for a moment that you are transported back to 1909, 100 years ago, but you retain your memory of all the advances which occurred in 100 years. Airplanes, cell phones, the internet, TV, space travel. Now, come back to 2009. Do you think progress will stop? What will be the most significant happening of the next 100 years? Leo Kim's book, Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality, will reveal to you the new scientific revolution and the power of the mind wirelessly connected to the universe will be the event which changes our world by healing many rifts and by changing our lives. Progress will not stop, and neither will you. Get Leo Kim's book at Amazon.com or visit HealingTheRiftBook.com.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we're talking about the metaphysical implications of entanglement. Oh, yeah. Just imagine, if you remember that title, you can go and tell all your friends and everybody that you know about that. And the people are going, wow, who are you listening to? What's all that stuff about? It sounds pretty far out there. But it really isn't that hard to understand. So, let me continue. It appears, it does more than appear, there's significant evidence now. It's not conclusive based upon some elements of physics, but it is conclusive in my mind, and there's a lot of it out there, that entanglement is reality. In other words, when sometimes something happens in a subatomic particle one place, it affects another subatomic particle in another place, and much faster than the speed of light, as a matter of fact, as far as we can know, in no time at all. So we have instantaneous activities taking place between very large separated distances of objects, in, at least in comparison to their size. And it also means, apparently, that thought is a controlling factor in the effects on entanglement. Further, that the entanglement itself may be an activity of the very, 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 very slight thought of even subatomic particles on themselves and each other. You can't really say on something else because they each are affecting each other. So you can't, but they are, it's instantaneous. And it's such a big thing that it isn't just a few subatomic particles happening 14 billion light years away from us, but it is taking place in the oceans of the Earth almost hourly. I don't know how often, but it's certainly many times a day and frequently enough so that once a week it's affecting a large ship. This is huge because it means that if you think about how many atoms there are in one of these waves that's 120 feet high and maybe 100 miles long, we don't know for sure, and that may be hundreds of yards wide, that's it. It's beyond our comprehension They may even be as much as a half a mile wide. And it's beyond our comprehension because the number is staggering. It's because even in a glass of water, there's like trillions and trillions of atoms. So they're all getting together, and they're all saying, hey, let's get together and make a big wave. And they do it. And then they say, well, we've done it for a minute. I think that's good enough. And everybody go out and do their own stuff now. And they stop doing it. And when they stop doing it, they all stop doing it at the same time. They don't stop doing it like a little bit here, a little bit there. No, it just, these waves come and they go in a second. And they last, at most, in many cases, like a minute or two. So they just, nothing. No way to explain it except that they are all doing it with each other. Now, the only thing I don't like about the rogue wave model is you don't see the distance issue. Because then it's easy to say, well, aren't they all touching? You know. But not really, because you see, they got to all come together and they got to draw energy from each other and share it. So actually, there is a non-local issue going on even in a rogue wave. It's easier to understand it when you can see it happening across miles of space. We are, one particle is one place on an accelerator, the other particle is another place on an accelerator. The particles are so small, a mile to them is the equivalent of a million light years to us for large things. So it's a huge, huge concept. Okay, there's no randomness. That's a big deal. Why is there no randomness? Because thought is a creator and an eliminator of randomness. And in a random universe, you couldn't have creation through thought. I know some of you out there are saying, well, wait a second, what about those physicists who are talking about parallel universes and it's, everything's random because you have an infinite number of parallel universes and so everything is happening everywhere all the time. No. That's not how the universe works. We don't have parallel universes. We have a multiverse. We have many dimensions. But we don't have a multi-parallel universe because then you wouldn't have randomness. And you could not explain the implications in metaphysics or any of the physical explanations of entanglement. Basically, this theory puts an end, in my mind, to the possibility of parallel universes. But for those of you who want to still consider that, I'll leave you to that. That's okay. It's just that if you actually do the math and start doing the logic of the math, you'll see it just won't hold up. If entanglement theories are correct, and if the observations of entanglement are correct, you can't end up going in that direction because you have to have randomness. So we don't have randomness. Instead, we have a universe that is constantly less and less random by the thought of creators greater than humans and by humans themselves and anything else that is thinking. Everything is adding to the non-randomness, ultimately, of the universe. It doesn't mean there isn't some pockets where some levels of randomness exist, levels, but not complete randomness. It's just that ultimately the universe will become something it hasn't become yet. That's in the overall thought of those that are the greatest of the creators, including God. So this is a theory now that is able to support both physics, metaphysics, and spirituality all at the same time. It's able to put in perspective how and what a God would be that exists within the universe. And I don't want to toot too much of my own horn here, but it is exactly the description, for those of you who have read the textbook I've written, plus many articles, that of what God would be like or is like. Because this all comes together into the concepts of what some people call in general ageless wisdom, or what we'll call philosophies, cosmologies, ontologies, that explain a universe in which a creator creates life and everything else for the benefit of all those things, as well as its own desire to grow from the constructions that it creates in the first place. It doesn't grow from its continued involvement. It grows from the involvement of all that it initially creates or helps to create. And its initial creation is just the ability for things to be alive, not for their end, not for the end of what they're going to become, but for the beginning of what they start off as. It's the progenitor, but not the end creator. Wow. That's what I'm saying. And this idea of entanglement allows us to explain so many things that seem inexplicable to physicists and other scientists. It explains ESP. It explains how two people can have the ability to be in contact with each other in a non-local condition. They can be separated by great distances and project both thought and maybe even have an effect on some types of energy in some small ways. You see, this is the incredible thing. All of the things that we presently are faced with as conundrums in physics can be explained by this entanglement and its further corollaries of understanding. Just amazing. Amazing. Now, let's take it a little bit further then. If that's the case, then what about these other dimensions? Because we've been talking about the fact that the part of the reason we can't observe what the full implication of entanglement is because we're stuck in the basement where there are other connecting factors of everything else in the universe, and those things are connected way beyond the speed of light, even in no time at all, and they're connected in ways that we can't understand because those dimensions they exist in, we don't get. Now, if you want to understand those dimensions, the possibility is there by reading stuff that has been written about them. One of them is Light, Speed, and Meaning, a textbook I wrote, but there's a lot of other books that similarly describe some of these dimensions. The thing I like about what I wrote is it's very defined about what the dimension is like in a more scientific way rather than just experiential. But regardless, you get the ideas there of what some of these other dimensions are actually like. And in what I've written, why it's like that. The concepts are there, which are missing in some of the other works that I've read, at least on the subject. So this can explain where we go when we die, which is I've explained many times in other shows, but it explains it not just where, but why. Because a large part of us is connected to other dimensions of time and space, and we just happen to have our consciousness focused on the part of us that exists in this physical dimension right now. When we die, we shift our consciousness from one part of ourselves to another part, and the part that remains here disintegrates, while the rest of us goes on to develop even greater levels of both consciousness and thought, and allows us to exist in these higher dimensions then of time and space, and to use more refined senses that are multidimensional themselves, so we can perceive the greater universe. And that's what exactly I describe as a death experience and where you end up with and where you how you live and why you have different experiences. And that's all there. And even the question of memory. Why can't we remember past lives if we keep reincarnating ourselves as a soul, at least? Our personality may go away, but we, as a soul, we keep existing. Then why don't we remember our past lives? And that has to do with the same kind of issues with entanglement. Our brains aren't capable of remembering past the barriers of these multidimensional elements that exist outside of this one unless they're connected to a greater being, which is God. So when we create virtue, when we create light in forms around us, and we are functioning as a co-creator with God. We are entangling our brains and our minds in ways that allows us to build a continuity of consciousness, but which survives the trip going around, going back to our souls and coming back to physical earth to live again. We can't do that if we don't create enough virtue, because there isn't enough connection to the thought in the higher dimensions so that we can keep the memory survivable. The information itself is lost. As a matter of fact, information is treated exactly within the model of entanglement, exactly as a thing. It's a thing. Stephen Hawking wrote several books and papers, articles about this very effect, that basically, if you talk about multi-dimensions, information has to be able to either survive or not survive, depending upon how you look at the where it's going to and coming from. And he says that information has to be treated just the same way you would treat things. It's no different. Well, interestingly, in the metaphysics that I'm familiar with, information is treated exactly that way. And in order to be informed, in order to keep the information that we've had, we must be able to use that information in a way which co-creates with our Creator, or it is lost. And that is also true beyond information into consciousness. If we don't create in ways that are co-creative with our Creator, and we create like we're evil, we're against our Creator, we not only destroy other things, including life, but we destroy our own consciousness and eventually become nincompoops, because we cannot over time maintain the integrity of the information that we had before, because time itself becomes twisted and contorted by a lack of cohesiveness, which the entanglement creates and allows to get rid of the randomness. So basically, we become flooded with randomness when we're evil. We become shocked and reduced in our ability to be conscious by working against the thought of our Creator. The more we do it, the more we lose. It may be a slow process, but over time, it's accumulative and fairly serious. So it is nonetheless an amazing factor that almost everything that I can think of that deals with metaphysics can now be further enhanced and explained through this concept of non-locality, where you don't have to be touching something to affect it, and where you can instantly communicate across the universe without going at or below the speed of light. You could also become co-creative with anyone in any place if you can supersede the restrictions caused by thinking too small. So the more we think like our Creator and the more we think outside of the limitations of this dimension, the more we could be in communication with all beings throughout our physical universe and eventually all beings throughout the entire multiverse. Everywhere we could be in contact with everything, because information can be treated the same way as we treat things. And therefore, the information itself can be conveyed in a non-local way. In other words, we don't have to have a telephone line that we're shooting information through at near the speed of light to reach somebody and talk to them about it. We could instantly communicate. And isn't that what ESP is about in some cases? Isn't that what some of the more, we'll say, esoteric phenomena, that means hidden phenomena, that we have so much in our culture, but there's so much also that science says, oh, that can't be true, that can't be true. But yet people experience it all the time. I mean, how many times have you been someplace, as an example of this, to develop it a little bit further, and you know someone's looking at you, and you turn your head to exactly the place you think they're looking at you from, and sure enough, your eyes meet their eyes, and there they are. They may be across the street or a quarter of a block away or whatever. Well, how did you know that they were looking at you? That's non-locality, isn't it? Yes. Because over that distance, you couldn't feel it by any energy that we're familiar with. And don't you feel it instantly as well? There's a time factor. Because there it would be harder to determine it because of the speed of light. We can't tell when someone, when something's happening across the street based upon a time difference. But nonetheless, we all have had ESP experiences, all of us, and we have them continually. But we try to not take notice of it because we think, well, maybe I'm just making it up or something. But are we really making those things up? I don't think so. Okay, so we have amazing results from this exploration of this whole new idea. What's coming up? What's the future going to be? I've only got a couple of minutes to cover this. I hope to have more. But, okay, the future is going to most likely be the following. In the next few years, we're going to discover that there are multi-dimensions of time and space that are connecting together all the occurrences that we will have observed in the next few years, which will totally, totally convince everybody that entanglement's for real, and no, non-locality definitely exists, and the standard model in physics doesn't seem to hold up, especially when you start dealing with multi-dimensions. And its string theory is really only part of a string that we're seeing right here, and there, it goes on into more complex strings, multi-dimensional strings, beyond the single dimension that we exist in here. All of this is going to be found out. And from that, a new framework for a new kind of physics that's going to include ESP, it's going to include spiritual issues, it's going to include life after death, it's going to include so many new areas that today are considered to be nothing more than metaphysics, will become physics. And there actually will be courses on this, mathematics will be developed to explain it, and who knows what else. And I predict all of this to happen from now until at least the year 2025. That's about 16 years or so, give or take. That's how long it's going to take for all this to start really coming together. It will have profound effects on people's values, what they think of life, what fears they have of death, and tremendously other elements in how we live on a daily basis. It's going to really shake our world, and we need that because right now things are in bad ways. Okay, we're running out of time for right now. I hope this has meant something to you. I know it's a kind of way out there subject, but just think you can tell all your friends about it tomorrow and say, I listened to the show last night, and boy, I know about something you don't know about. It's called entanglement and all this other stuff. Okay, on April 20th, if you're in the Phoenix area, go hear Mimi talk about the mental realm, which is a multidimensional part of our universe, much more developed than the one we're in. And you can find out about it from 7 p.m. till 8:15 p.m. over at Mesa Fiesta, Books, Borders, Books and Music. You better go there because I don't know if they're going to survive the depression we're in. Hopefully people will go to bookstores still because we need that. So go ahead and there's still no charge. You don't have to pay anything to go there. And go in and participate and listen to what she says and talk about it, et cetera. And you can also talk about these shows if you want to, because she's open to that, if you happen to have the opportunity or chance. Well, we're running out of time for right now. Continue to listen to the show even after I stop speaking, because there's a commercial. I know it's a commercial, but it's an interesting book, and the guy's talking about it. Listen to what he has to say. He's one of the sponsors for our show, and we want to promote what he's doing because he's kind of like a synergy. So we're going to run that commercial as soon as I stop yakking, and I will speak to you all again next week at the same time. And until then, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.
People ask Leo Kim why he wrote Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality. He wrote it to empower you, to explain how you can discover the spiritual you, reveal your passions, realize your purpose, and find greater happiness in life, how to deal with death and illness of friends and loved ones, and to tell you about the healing mind, how changing your mind can and does change your brain, your health, and your life. Spiritual teachings, when merged with 21st century scientific teachings, will transform our lives. Leo Kim wanted to write in layman's terms for the non-scientists on what exciting benefits will occur in the 21st century when we heal the rift between science and spirituality. Buy Healing the Rift at bookstores, Amazon, or email him for a discounted copy at leo@healingtheriftbook.com.